Thank you for listening to an audio recording from the Midwest Genealogy Center's Tell Me a Story program, an initiative dedicated to preserving America's history through the timeless practice of oral storytelling. To learn more about the Tell Me a Story program, including how you can add your own story to the collection, visit MidwestGenealogyCenter.org/tellmeastory. On behalf of the Midwest Genealogy Center and Mid-Continent Public Library, we hope you enjoy the following story.
Good morning. It's July 13th, 2021, and I'm here today talking with the head of nutrition services regarding how they handled the situation of the pandemic of 2020. Please introduce yourself.
My name is Lori Danella. I'm the nutrition director. I've been with the Lee Summit School District for 13 years, and previously I was with the Kansas City, Kansas School District for 10 years. I oversee all the operations in the nutrition department. We have a staff of 160 members, and we serve 18,400 kids breakfast, lunch, and snacks.
So when this pandemic hit, what kind of programs had you had in place already? So were you serving breakfast? And then what were the other meals you were part
of? Okay, pre-COVID, we serve grab-and-go breakfast in all of our elementary and middle schools where students come in the door, they grab their breakfast, and they take it to the classroom, and they're allowed 10 to 15 minutes to consume their breakfast. We changed over to that program because of the stigma of just the free kids going to the cafeteria, and many of our buildings weren't serving hardly any breakfast at all, and we knew there was a need. We also serve lunch daily in all of our buildings. We offer regular hot meals. We offer grab-and-go. We offer grab-and-go to students that may be on a work-study program or have jobs at the high school level, and they leave at lunchtime. And we also provide snacks for our before and after daycare program.
Okay. So because you and I, just in our previous conversation here off recorder, we're talking about the backpack program. Mm-hmm. So talk to me about that and how that works in the school district, or how it doesn't work in the school district, and refinements you've had to make to that program.
Okay. Actually, the backpack program isn't a part of our nutrition department.
Okay.
That is a program that was started, and I believe it was Harvesters that came in because they had been in contact with some churches that knew there were a need for families on the weekends that didn't have food. The students were only getting the meals that were offered during the week. So it was kind of a collaboration. We helped them out to target how to find the most needy students that needed the program, but not to identify them and kind of pull them out from the rest of the students. And as it grew, each building was adopted by a church or an organization, and those organizations and churches provide the backpacks. They pick them up on usually Tuesdays or Wednesdays after the students bring them back in, and they have them all packed and ready to go on Fridays or whatever the last day of the week is. And they have shelf-stable items that the students can prepare in the microwave, or items that are good for snacking, cereals, different kinds of items that will last them and their families through the week.
Okay. And then, tell me about how nutrition services had to change their thoughts when after COVID hit.
Okay. I kind of had in my heart in February, I knew something was going to happen. After a flight, we came back and we saw several international flights have masks on, and they were kind of separating them out in rooms, and it kind of scared me. So I started thinking about the what ifs. We always have a disaster program, but that usually deals with tornadoes or fires or some type of natural disaster. And we had never really thought of a pandemic ever happening in our lifetime. So we were getting ready to go on spring break, and things kept getting worse. So I knew that we were going to have to switch gears and come up with a plan to continue to feed students if the buildings closed. So I contacted staff and asked who would be willing to work. I secured shelf-stable items. We actually have a warehouse, a freezer, and a cooler in this building, so we were able to bring in a fairly large amount of items I felt we would need. And I knew ahead of time that probably supplies, gloves, masks, and that type of thing were going to be hard to come by, so right away I ordered pallets and received those in within a week and created a menu and tried to come up with items that the students would eat that we would be able to distribute out to the community. I got with transportation, I got with our staff, I got with building leaders to see what locations we felt would be the best to set up curbside service. And we decided on Lee Summit High School to pack all the meals. We wanted a central location because we only had 40 staff members that volunteered to work. So we had to coordinate time, we had to coordinate what we had, and try to guesstimate on numbers. We had no idea how many people would come and get the meals.
So what kind of items were in those packets that you put together?
In the beginning, we were still able to get fresh produce, so we tried to continue with packets of baby carrots. We did sliced apples, different kinds of sliced fruit, packaged grapes, whole apples, whole oranges. We have Uncrustables, which is a peanut butter and jelly sandwich that the students love. We had plenty of those on hand. And then also I secured pre-made sandwiches that were frozen and were already wrapped, so we were able to keep those in our freezer and just pull those out, and those helped keep the product cold. We had pre-cupped fruits and pre-cupped veggies, and we did cheese sticks, we did chips, we did breakfast items, we did the heat and serve pancakes where students could just put that in the microwave, the French toast. We tried to keep a large variety so the students wouldn't get bored, but we wanted to keep some fresh items in there and items that they would like, and took the least amount to prepare.
And so all of that was packed over at Lee Summit High School?
Yes, it was. And what we also did in the beginning is, since school closed so abruptly, we went to all 24 of our schools and we got any shelf-stable items that we could get. We got all the milk that we had there because we had just gotten milk delivery, so we were able to utilize that and not waste any of that. And once that milk ran out, the milk company started delivering. We were getting our own milk delivery and we were getting so much milk in, because there were times that we were packing 25,000 meals in one day to get students through 5 days worth of breakfast and 5 days worth of lunches.
Oh my gosh. And how many volunteers helped?
We had 40 of our staff members.
My
yes.
Gosh.
We had a system down. The hardest part was what to put these meals in, because you didn't want to smash them, and you had to put them in to get them to buses to deliver to the other schools so we could do curbside. And then we also had some churches volunteer for parents that couldn't get out, or parents that were quarantined, or students that were still home by themselves and their parents were essential and working. So we called them porch delivery. They knew what time we were coming and what time they would be delivered. We knocked on the door, dropped them on the porch, and they got them, and they had their meals also.
And so who did the deliveries of those?
We had some of our staff, and then United Methodist Church, and then I can't remember the other two churches. The one on Lakewood Boulevard.
Okay.
I think that's United Methodist or Grace Methodist.
Okay, I think that might be right.
Yeah, but several. And then we also had some teachers that were worried about their students, so they asked if they could ride on the buses also. We did have a few routes where we did deliver to different apartment complexes. to try to get those students also. I mean, we had all ranges of delivery systems. Whatever it took to get the students, we were going to do.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just amazing how many people were calling that wanted to help pack meals, to help deliver meals, and, you know, just spread the word or do whatever was needed.
So what companies did you order from?
U.S. Foods in Topeka is my prime vendor. With us receiving federal funding, I have to go through the procurement process and I have to bid out. So they were actually already in place. And when they started having shortages, I contacted a couple other vendors. Tasty Brands was a company that did pre-made sandwiches, and then there was a Vista company that did meal kits that we did utilize some of those also. And with us being able to get pallets at a time, and Lee Summit was closed and we had all that room, we were able to have pallets just delivered there of those shelf-stable items. So I had quite a few vendors, and then CNC Produce, which is locally, did all of our produce, and Belfonte Milk Company has our milk bin, and they provided the milk for us.
Oh my gosh, that seems like an overwhelming situation. I mean, did at night where you're like head spinning and like, okay, what do I need to do next kind of thing?
It was. I can say I've been in this business for over 20 years, and I have never experienced anything like this. It was almost mind-boggling. We would get our produce order and baby carrots wouldn't come in. So we would, you know, okay, what are we going to put out today? But we all brainstormed together and we found a way. I mean, the kids were never short on food. They always had plenty of food. It may not have been what was on the menu, but we compromised. And, you know, we thought outside the box, you know, that mm-hmm. type of thing. The milk deliveries, we found that when you're serving that many students, that there's a shortage of equipment, of coolers, of you have to keep that milk cold to get out to the site. So I applied for several grants through Midwest Dairy and through several other companies. And I had Midwest Dairy had some insulated milk coolers on hand, and they brought me out what they had, and they said, just keep this.
Oh, gosh,
you know,
wonderful.
They would want to do anything they could. And about that time, everybody else was in the same place, so you couldn't get any additional milk, insulated milk coolers or carts or different things you needed. So it was a big process of improvising and using what you could, and the staff was phenomenal. They worked their hearts out. I know they were exhausted every day when they went home, but they were bound and determined they were going to get everything done and get those kids fed all the time.
So what did you do about kids with special needs? You know, they had allergies and things
we
like that.
We still honored that. We can take pride in that in our district. I started our allergy program when I started with the district. We have probably over 500 students on record of different allergies, of celiac. We've got PKU. We've got across the board. What we did is we tried to contact parents via email and then on social media. And if they had those special needs, to contact us, and then we would target what area they would be picking up, and we would have their bags prepared separate, and their gluten-free or whatever it was all labeled, and they would pick those up, and we just kind of went without a beat, and, you know, we
no problems with any
no
of them.
No problem at all.
Oh,
no.
My gosh, isn't that
no.
wonderful? Oh, gosh.
No, it wasn't.
So now you, so once school, or at least partial school, kind of started back in, and kids might have been, were they actually eating cooked meals in the cafeteria?
Yes, yes.
And then tell me how that was handled and the distancing and all that kind of stuff.
Okay. It was hard in the beginning because through last year, August, we were doing curbside only, and then we didn't start school in August because the counts were still really high. So then we thought, okay, we kept extending our dates so the kids would not miss any meals. When we began in September, we did curbside, we did home delivery, and then we started with the elementary students. It depended on the size, but some of the students would eat in the classroom. Our staff would deliver the hot meals to the classroom, and some would eat in the cafeterias. The ones that ate in the classroom, we had the teachers take their order that morning so they could still have their choice of a hot entree. They all just didn't have to eat the same thing. So we were portioning everything up. Staff was wearing masks. Of course, we always wear gloves. We took every safety precaution as possible, you know, as we could. And we actually, our sanitizer we use to keep everything clean and to sanitize everything was good to use against COVID, so we didn't have to switch any disinfectant, and it's food safe. That's a big thing in the kitchens. Yeah. You have to, you know, it's a catch-22. You want to kill all of these germs, but you have to think about what you're cleaning with and what you're using in your dish machines and that type of thing. So what we currently used was perfect, so we were really happy about that. It was challenging for staff because some were serving in the cafeteria. The students would come down, and we purchased floor clings for social distancing with arrows so they knew which direction to come and to keep social distance, and they did awesome. You would think of kindergartners, first graders, it would be hard, but they did a really good job. But our staff was trying to serve in the cafeterias, then do the meals, the hot meals, in disposable containers and taken to the classroom. So it was really stressful for the staff. And then having the hybrid students, because we didn't start back all in session, we wanted hot meals for them also. So we continued to do regular curbside, but then we offered hot meals on the same day if the parents wanted to pick them up, so those hybrid students could have a hot meal.
So define hybrid.
The hybrid was when, let's say, third grade, part of them went on Monday and Tuesday, and then the other half went on Thursday and Friday, and then none of them went on Wednesday. We had part of the elementary building on that program, and the younger part was going 5 days a week. So we had all types of meal programs going, and we wanted them to have the choice of the hot or the cold, so we did what it took to for everybody to have the same meal opportunity.
So what were the menus for some of those days then?
We went back to regular menus so the students could enjoy. Chicken nuggets is one of the favorite things of our students. Big Daddy Pizza. We have a breaded fish nugget that the kids love. We went back to doing our Taco Tuesdays where we offer hard or soft shell tacos. We do taco salad, we do walking tacos, and they still had their choice of hot vegetable, which is usually green beans, corn. They love mashed potatoes once a week, so we do one or mashed potatoes once a week with gravy. Mixed vegetables, broccoli and cauliflower, cold vegetables, hot vegetables, and then at least two choices of fruit. So they still had a good choice. It wasn't like in the old days when I was in school, a tray was handed to you and that's what you had to eat. Mm-hmm. They still had their choices.
Now that's really good. I was thinking when you were talking about that, some of my experiences, I went to a Catholic school because
The
funding wasn't very much. And over here at St. Catherine's of Siena, we went there for a year, my sister and my brothers and I. We had lima bean and cornbread every single day.
Yeah.
And you know, to this day, I can't look at a lima bean.
Really? Now, see, I still love lima beans. That's one of my favorites. That's funny. My mom always laughs at that. But yes, I get that.
Okay.
But we still had to follow nutrition guidelines. Mm-hmm. And we take pride on, you know, we watch calories. We watch percentage of fat. Most of our products are whole grain, low sodium. We still try to stay, you know, in that pattern. We did have waivers. We were lucky to have waivers that if something wouldn't come in and we needed to order, or we needed to offer a dark green for that week or a bean for that week, that's okay. We substituted something else, but we wouldn't get in trouble for that. With us being federally funded, we have to follow all of those guidelines. Currently, we were getting $1.89 reimbursement for breakfast, and for lunch about $3.23. So when you think about labor, all the packaging, that's what has killed all of our budgets for school food service, because you can't operate. We're such penny pinchers anyway and still offer the good meals. It was really hard. We actually had $1.2 million in reserves. We went through that within the first couple of months.
Oh my gosh.
It's just sad, and I'm hoping, knock on wood, next month I will be out of the red.
And so then, to be out of the red, what do you have to do?
Serve as many meals as we can, watch the budget, pair items, expensive items and cheaper items together. I'm going to bring back farm to school because the kids like the farm fresh fruits and veggies a lot better, and a lot of times those are more economical because they're fresh and you get longer shelf life out mm-hmm. of them. We're going back to our salad bars, what we call them self-serve garden bars. Students eat what they take, and when they have a larger, beautiful arrangement of fruits and veggies, they're going to take only what they're going to eat, and they're going to eat it all, so mm-hmm. the waste is less.
So what is the formula for, I'm just trying to think of, how do you, so are there inspections, or is there a set formula that or guidelines that you have to check off like every month or every quarter, or how do you do that?
School food service is tough. As far as health department inspections, we have two a year, and they're very rigorous. Restaurants only have one, and, you know, we serve kids every day, so we take pride in that. We always have really, really good health inspections. As far as state audits, DESE has a food and nutrition department, and they kind of put forth with USDA all of our guidelines.
And what is DESE?
DESE is the Department of Education.
Okay.
Each state has one, and they basically govern the education sector and nutrition and any school-based activity. And ours falls under food and nutrition. And they do audits every 3 years. They look at our menus. They look at our calorie content, our nutrition content. They look at the way we purchase items. And, excuse me, my throat's getting dry.
Okay.
But we have to follow all of their guidelines and all their regulations, or they can withhold our funding.
Okay.
So, that's done every 3 years. And then as far as each kitchen, our managers and my assistant directors, we have forms that we do a checkoff list, making sure everybody's wearing their hairnets, making sure everybody's wearing their gloves. The equipment is operating. We check temperatures just like the health department does. We kind of do these little mini monthly inspections just like the health department does. So we are very controlled and very monitored, which is good because we serve kids and they are, you know, a susceptible, you know, their population is more susceptible to a foodborne illness than,
sure.
you know, anything.
And so in terms of your equipment and so forth, do you have in-house maintenance folks that take care of that, or is that contracted out?
We're actually lucky. Our facility department has HVAC workers. We have the electricians, so they kind of do preventive maintenance for us, and then whenever an oven or a dishwasher may go down, we put in work orders, and they come and repair it, and if they can't fix it, then I have an outside company that I use.
Okay.
But all of our actual equipment, we are a self-supporting department. We don't receive any funding from the district. The only thing we receive funding from is the meals we serve and our a la carte, our snack sales. So, COVID really took a toll on our budget, so we're trying to, you know, get back on our feet because a lot of our equipment, once it gets to a certain age, we have to get on an equipment replacement program. People don't realize commercial equipment, and it has to be approved for food service. A basic convection oven runs about $7,000. A combi oven that has steam runs about $15,000. A new dish machine runs anywhere from $30,000 to $80,000. There's just so much that we have to prepare the food, and if you can't prepare the food if you don't have the tools to do it.
And so being a self-sustaining arm of the school district,
uh-huh.
So besides what kids pay, or the ones that can pay for uh-huh. lunches, Tell me again how you get your funding then. Is it grants and things like that?
It's federal funding for every meal we serve, the $1.89 and the $3.23. I have to do a monthly claim. We use a computer system that our managers keep track of the meals that go through, and I do that claim every year or every month, and we get money from the federal government. What equates to the amount of meals we sell. And then like the snacks we sell, which are all Smart Snack approved, we can't just sell anything we want. If we sell bottled water, Rice Krispie treats, whole grain cookies, extra slices of pizza, that's what we call our a la carte. And all of that funding goes into our account, and that's usually what we use for equipment repair, uniforms, that type of thing.
What about kids that are, and tell me, how many schools are actually on the reduced lunch program?
It varies by building. I can share with you, I think I have the newest one. Lee Summit Elementary and Westview and Meadow Lane are our highest free and reduced buildings. I'll give you one of these copies so you have. Meadow Lane is at 56% free and reduced.
Excuse me.
Okay. Meadow Lane's right at 56% free and reduced. And then Westview is at almost 50%. And I'd say our least free and reduced school, it looks like Longview Farms, but I'll share a copy of that with you.
Okay, and then Lee Summit Elementary is the highest?
Let's see, Lisa, yes, they're 53%, almost 54%.
Gosh, so I know that that's, the teachers are very passionate over that little school. I've known several of them over the years. I wonder, how do you manage that when you know kids are they're struggling like that, and then they are trying to be just like the other kids who are not on the reduced lunch program,
right,
and everything, and that
what we do now, we call it overt identification. So when a student comes through the register, nobody knows whether they're free or reduced.
Okay.
They don't know if they're paid. That was a big push probably about 10 years ago, because you had the stigma, like I said before, only the free kids eat in the cafeteria. Once we started grab and go for breakfast, everybody's grabbing in the morning, you know, they have their lunch number, but they don't see on the screen whether they're free, reduced, or paid. Because the parents prepay for the paid students or the reduced, because reduced is 30 for breakfast and 40 for lunch. So that money's already in there, and everybody goes through just like another person. So there is no identifying factors of whether you're free or reduced.
And so if a family doesn't have any extra funds, they are on the free system with a certain number, and then
everybody has an ID number, and
okay,
it doesn't change whether you're free or reduced. It's a random number they get when they're in kindergarten, and it goes with them all the way through their senior year. If parents are struggling, the free and reduced applications are published through the USDA every July, and we just recently opened up and sent the information out to the parents. And we encourage them to fill them out. Sometimes parents are too proud to fill those out,
mm-hmm,
so they'll start running up negative balances, which you've probably heard, you know, our district usually has a fair amount when we're not feeding all the kids free. We send the parents emails, and we have eConnect calls to let them know when they're like over negative $5. If we see that they're really struggling, we'll contact them personally and ask them if they want to fill out an application. If they don't, then we talk with the counselor and we talk with the principal and let them know that there's an issue, and they have the ability now to go ahead and fill one out for the family.
Oh, that's wonderful.
We fought for years as a professional organization through the School Nutrition Association and finally got that passed. So principals can do that now, and that is good for a year. And if there's negative balances, we try to use donations that we get. We have the Angel Fund is what it's called. And if seniors graduate and have money left in their account, we give them the option of receiving that back, or they can donate to the Angel Fund.
That's great.
We have a lot of people that just come in and drop off checks and say, please use this, you know, for students that need help. So there's a lot of caring and compassion out there that want to help our families.
Okay. And then I'm really pleased to know about that, because as I go around and I talk about our food pantries that we support, mm-hmm. I'd like to be able to mention that, because mm-hmm. we get that from some people. Why aren't you supporting local blah, blah, blah? And I go, well, my friend is from Osceola, but we do support local mm-hmm. because now his son, who works for a used car dealership, collects things that some of his, there's a lot of older guys that come in there and they want to talk, you know, how guys
yes.
are about cars. But they all, some of them go to Abundant Life and some of the other food pantries, mm-hmm. and they're not using everything. So they drop things off there at his office, and then I take them out to Lee Summit Elementary through a curbside pantry, uh-huh. and then I stock up their pantry with that stuff. So
correct.
We are, and then in the beginning, I was taking the food to social services.
Right, right.
So nothing goes to waste. So
uh-huh.
yeah, so I'm glad to hear about that.
Yes, and during the pandemic, normally, we receive, depending on how many students we feed in October, we receive commodities. And it's based on the percentage of students you feed, and you get that many dollars to spend on commodities. And I had a lot of frozen strawberries. I had some frozen blueberries. I had some pasta. So I worked with a couple of the schools that were doing like family pantry night pickup, Prairie View, and I believe we sent some over to Lee Summit Elementary, but we were able to share some of our product and give it to them to hand out to the families. Where normally during a pandemic, or when we weren't under pandemic conditions, we're not allowed to do that. But, you know, USDA understood the need for these families, so, and they knew we would make good decisions, so they allowed us to do that.
And so what if, through our pantry and through my phone calls and so forth, Zarega Pasta, as they manufacture pasta uh-huh. here, they donated over 100 pounds of pasta for our food pantry.
Uh-huh.
And then I went out, had money to buy the sauce over at Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
And what if I was able to arrange for a donation, say, at one of the schools? Would that be a possibility or not?
If they have a food pantry, yes.
Okay.
And I'm sure almost all of them do now, and even the middle schools. And I think Lee Summit High has one also, that they have a pantry. Not only food, I think they have clothing also. So if those students need to go, you know, to the pantry and use it, that they would accept
which
that.
Pantry, I mean, I guess I'm putting you on the spot right now, but what pantry would you say, or what school would be the most in need?
You know, I would say it varies.
Okay. Just
honestly,
pick one and go with it?
I would say that, because even your more Flint, you know, and I hate saying that. I mean, Longview Farms has families that,
mm-hmm.
you know, need help. Sunset Valley has families. It's just everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's really sad.
Well, maybe we could set up something that, because I'll have to work on that, because they said they would, and I picked it all up, and they were lovely over there,
uh-huh.
by the way, and maybe we could do each quarter or something like that, you know, they could donate X amount of,
right,
and we could spread it around a little bit.
Right. And, you know, I would be willing to work with you to find out from the principals who has the pantries,
oh.
you know, kind of what they're in need
That'd
of.
That'd be great,
and,
yeah.
And that type of thing.
Because I don't want to load up somebody's pantry with
right.
pasta if they don't have the room for it, because I know in the very beginning, LSE did not have a pantry.
Exactly.
And I don't know why, but they never did. They're kind of, yes, if you could help me with that, that would be terrific.
Definitely, yes, I
okay.
would love to do that.
Because there might be a time when, say, the Clinton Votech has enough and they've got a local, that problem is they don't have enough local support. There's
right.
not an awareness of the newly created pantry. But once it gets up and running, I'm sure a church would want to take that over.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, we can use our resources around here, because I do have some Price Chopper gift cards and stuff
uh-huh.
that I'd like to be able to use locally,
mm-hmm.
if possible. So, and then that can be out fundraising too.
Yeah.
So
Yeah, and we're fortunate now because President Trump, when he was in office, he got with USDA, and the Secretary of Agriculture was Sonny Perdue at the time, and that was the first round of where they approved all meals free for school districts that chose to do that. Why a district wouldn't choose to do it, I don't know, mm-hmm. but there were some that did choose not to do that. So we took advantage of that. First, it was free meals through December of 2020, and then they extended it through the end of this past school year, and then when President Biden got in, he has approved it for the entire school year. So we're fortunate we're going to be able to feed all students free, 18 and under, free for this year.
Oh man, that's
so we'll
wonderful.
Still be able to do curbside, so if there's siblings that aren't in school yet, or if there's a special needs student that's 21 and under, those families can still pick up meals also.
Gosh, that's great. So, that's really wonderful.
Mm-hmm, it is.
So what made you decide to get into nutrition services?
I've always, food has been my passion. My mom was a French war bride during World War II and came over here. So, of course, she was a wonderful cook, and I learned to cook when I was very young. So I started out in grocery retail, and did a lot of catering, helped set up the delis and for several large organizations. And, my first husband, was diagnosed with cancer. And I lost him 6 months after his diagnosis and had two small boys. Well, in grocery retail, you work 7 days a week, you work nights, you work holidays, you work at all. So I made the decision to move from a very rural small town and come to the Kansas City area and picked Lee Summit. And just happened to have a star one weekend and saw school food service. Well, I had never really thought about that. So I applied and got a management job right off the bat, and that was in Kansas City, Kansas. I lived here in Lee Summit, drove every day for 10 years. And that was a nightmare because the Grand View Triangle and everything was a mess then. But once you get in school food service, your heart is there. It was good for me to work over there because I had never seen food insecurity until I was over there. You know, when you come from a rural community, everybody works together and you really don't notice that. So that kind of changed my life. And I kind of waited for a position here because I wanted to work in Lee Summit because my kids went to Lee Summit.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just always had a passion. My boys, I would take them on take your child to work day, and they loved it. They'd be back there rolling homemade dinner rolls
oh
with
my gosh.
Bread ladies. And they both had jobs in food service when they turned 16. One worked at Bob Evans and one worked at Backyard Burgers. So it was good to get them introduced into food. But just the passion of food and serving the kids, serving the community and helping families out. You just, nobody understands how big our profession is. I've served on the state board of the School Nutrition Association and the national board because we're the ones that are the driving factors of the regulations and ensuring, you know, the meals are good meals and just the support that we need to keep the programs running. But, you know, it's just so rewarding when you're in there and the kids come up and hug you and, you know, they'll say, oh, I saw you in the kitchen, or this is my kitchen lady's boss. And, you know, it's funny when you go into a grocery store or you're at the park or somewhere and the kids notice that.
It's really cool.
Yeah,
very
it
cool.
is.
And
yeah.
you were talking about those roles. I remember years ago, I've always been active with various 501c3s
uh-huh.
around town. And you used to be able to buy those cinnamon rolls that the school district made. And
mm-hmm.
there was nothing like them. I mean, the beautiful, light, fluffy,
yes.
and big. So what happened with that? Was that just too much to
no,
handle?
No. What happened is in 2010, they changed our regulations. They felt our school meals weren't nutritious, which I totally disagree with. And I have been one of the biggest fighters against our new regulation of going whole grain. Whole grain is, to me, causing a lot of digestive issues in students. We're seeing a rise in celiac, but the administration felt it was better and tried to switch us all over whole grain crust. I mean, and I'm sorry, but you can't make a good cinnamon roll or a good dinner roll with 100% whole grain bread, and it's not as tasty. I mean, you have to have that yeast, you have to have that sugar in it, you have, mm-hmm. and that doesn't hurt the kids. I mean, what they're eating McDonald's is a lot worse. So we're kind of, we've been given a little bit of flexibility, so now it's 51%. So yes, we have our regular Southern biscuits back, our good fluffy biscuits that don't have whole grain in them, and there's a few items we've been able to change. They also change our regulations on breakfast, and protein was not a priority. Whole grains was a priority. We got a lot of pushback from teachers and from parents. Why are you not serving sausage, the ham, you know, the yogurts and all of that? Well, they wouldn't let us. We had to make sure we served two whole grains every day, which is all carbs. My background's in nutrition. My degrees are in nutrition, and it was hard because the change was made without really any nutrition input. It was medical doctors, and that's when President Obama was in office, and their chef kind of took the lead with Michelle Obama, and they kind of worked on these regulations. I'm not saying they're wrong, I just don't agree with them. You want to do what's right for the kids, and you want to do what the kids are going to eat, because if you don't provide meals that they're going to purchase, they're going to bring something from home, and most generally those are a Lunchable, a can of Coke, or just things you see come in. It's heartbreaking because we've worked so hard to get our program top notch, and like you said, you couldn't beat our cinnamon rolls. Were beautiful.
They were the best. Everybody I knew that was involved in a nonprofit would come here and buy those things.
And you know, we actually 3 years ago we sold cinnamon rolls and dinner rolls, the good ones, mm-hmm. without the whole grain, to our staff for a fundraising activity.
Oh, wow.
So we could take our managers to conferences.
But they went fast.
Oh, gosh. Yes, they went. So hopefully one of these days we'll be back to that.
Oh, that'd be cool.
You know, like I said, we do have a little bit of leeway, and the first thing I had to change was biscuits because the kids kept saying, these are hockey pucks, and a whole grain, a whole grain biscuit was like a hockey puck.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have our battles, and, mm-hmm. you know, we always want to do what's right for the kids, but there were some regulation changes that we didn't approve of, but, you know.
So now, some of the staff, do they prefer to work in the, you know, making the rolls and things like that?
Yes.
And so you kind of give them, let them work at their preference.
Yes.
Is that how you do that?
That's kind of what we do. We hire everybody in at a sub status because that way we can put them in a building and they can work and see if they get along with the staff, if the manager likes them, if it's not too fast-paced. So if they don't like that first building, we can try another building. When you have 24 buildings, they're not all the same.
Mm-hmm.
All the staff is not the same. And we always laugh and say, when you work with a bunch of women, you know, we have about 8 men now, and it's funny because I swear they have, I don't know how they do it, but they do great. But they kind of learn the ropes, and not only the baking and the cooking, you've got dishwashing, you've got cutting up veggies, you've got cleaning veggies, you've got setting up the lines. I mean, there's just so much involved. But our long hour people are what we call our production staff, and that's either cook or bakers. And we train them on each item. And some people have the niche for baking, others don't. And we let them make that decision. And they know they have to fill in because if somebody would get sick, mm-hmm. they can handle a week of working one or the mm-hmm. other. But with baking, you either have it or you don't.
Mm-hmm. That's,
you know,
for sure, especially on the yeast.
Oh, yeah. And whether you pinch the rolls or you roll the rolls, mm-hmm. you know, you got to have that knack. And some people just don't have it.
My late mother-in-law had this beautiful recipe for Parker House rolls that she made every time we went to their house for dinner. And so I got the recipe. And I never had done anything with yeast before, so I thought, okay, I'm going to bake these things up. Well, they were the proverbial hockey puck. I mean, and so her daughter said, I don't know how you did that because those things are really easy to make. I go, well, I don't think yeast and I like each other very much, so I've kind of stayed away from it and respect anybody that can, because it's really an art. There's a touch.
Oh, it is.
There really
and
is.
The water temperature, because the yeast we buy is in 5-pound packages, mm-hmm. because when they make a thing of bread, they're using a stand mixer, you know, that's about a 20-quart. But yeah, it takes art. It really does.
How many hours a day do you say the staff, are they on their feet?
They're on their feet the whole time they're working. We have 3-hour, 4-hour, 5-hour, 6-hour, and 7-hour positions. Our managers work 8 hours. So, you know, they get a break, and if they cashier, they get to sit down. But pretty much it's fast-paced. That's mm-hmm. the thing about it. You've got to be able to multitask and just move all the time. Because when those kids come through that line, they want their food, and they want their food now.
Mm-hmm. And they only have 20 minutes for lunch?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Oh, my gosh.
I'd like to have more than that, mm-hmm. and I've been writing to all of our legislators about that, because I just feel they need 30 minutes or more.
I do, yeah.
Gobbling. And that's not our decision. That's a,
of course.
That's a principal decision.
Sure.
And that's all with scheduling. So
when the first time I ever heard that, I thought, we always got, I don't think we had an hour, but it's longer than yeah. half an hour.
And the teacher sat down with you.
Yes.
And ate.
Yeah. They sat down, you can visit and all that kind
exactly.
of stuff. And you actually had time to digest your food.
Yes.
I mean, because some people digest in a different rate. Mm-hmm. And so it's to gobble yeah. stuff down, I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm an opponent for recess before lunch mm-hmm. and not after lunch.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big switchover that the district's kind of doing right now, is getting the recess before. Because the kids eat so much better and they're hungry mm-hmm. and they don't get sick.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good plan. Mm-hmm. That really is a good plan.
Yeah.
So anything new and innovative for the new year?
Oh, well, that's what I'm attending right now, is our national conference. A couple things that I have seen that we're going to introduce is we're going to have a few more Oriental bowls. The students are into a lot of sauces.
Mm-hmm.
Even the little guys are like hot stuff. So we'll be doing like rice bowls, ramen noodle bowls, that type of thing, to where it's all built. We're probably going to expand on our salad offerings. We have a lot of students that love the salads, like with fajita meat or chicken or turkey. I mean, we're going to offer a lot of different variety of salads. Something that's getting really big in the high schools is coffee. We have a coffee system, at Lee Summit High, that integrates milk in with it, and that's how we can sell it. It meets Smart Snacks, that they're getting that full cup serving of milk
mm-hmm.
in with the coffee as an iced coffee or latte, and they don't even know the difference, but we're getting that milk in them.
Yeah, sure.
And that's a really big thing right mm-hmm. now. Farm to school is a big thing. I love purchasing from our local farmers. I work with KC Food Hub, and I mean, we get in odd things like Brussels sprouts and things that the kids normally wouldn't eat, but when they know it's coming from a local farmer and the way we prepare it, they're going to try it and they're going to eat it. So I'm really anxious to see some of the fresh lettuce coming back in, the tomatoes. I can't wait for school to start and have those tomatoes. School gardens. I work a lot with Fuel Up to Play 60 on getting garden grants, and we use that product in the kitchens. A couple of schools that grew a lot of cucumbers, we made refrigerator pickles and were able to serve them to the kids, and they just thought that was great. You know, I think it's important for them to see where their food comes from,
mm-hmm.
What it takes, and being city kids, a lot of them don't know that.
That's right.
So that's really important to me, is the farm to school and the school gardens and that type of thing.
So how were you able to locate this organization that does that?
Fuel Up to Play 60. that's part of Midwest Dairy and the Kansas City Chiefs, and they're really a nationwide program, and each of the sports teams kind of works with that dairy organization. I started working with them about 15 years ago because they're really into promoting milk and milk items, and they've helped us to provide like yogurt parfaits and equipment to make smoothies for breakfast. And they work with the Gen Youth Foundation, and they raise money to be able to put these grants out to get the, we'll apply for a breakfast cart to be able to get more breakfast out there, or a smoothie station. So we have the smoothie machine, so that way we can get more milk, yogurt, and fresh fruits out there to the students. So it's just a grant process that you apply for, and at the same time, I apply for a physical activity part, so I've helped a lot of PEs get recess items. The run clubs get different items they need for their run clubs, but it's kind of a one-in-one thing. Your physical activity and nutrition go hand in hand, mm-hmm. So I love working with them. So
are you the one that applies for all the grants, or do you have somebody that helps you with
that?
It? Okay. So then that means there's research involved in this. So how do you, how long do you think it takes to, is that like an endless?
I probably shouldn't say this, but I do a lot from home and I work a lot of weekends. My kids are grown. It's my husband and my two dogs. And I love what I do. I'm always trying to find something to better our department and something better for the kids. So I just research. I'll pull up grants, or if I'm looking for a school garden, or I'm looking for something for PE. I'm a Google queen, and I just kind of start searching and see. My next thing is herbs. I'd like to start using more herbs, so I'm going to start researching what grants are out there to do, like the little herb gardens. But I just research and apply and hope for the best, and just, it takes time, but it's worth it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, since I've been here, I've probably gotten well over $350,000 worth of grants.
Oh, my gosh. Congratulations.
To supplement our program. To help PE, to help, our breakfast program, just a little bit of everything. But, that's money we don't have.
That's right.
So you have to go out there and search for it.
Especially since you're kind of a self-funding department.
Yes.
So, you've got to be out there.
You've got to.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think you're wonderful. I'm really impressed with your passion for this.
Thank you.
And the kids are really lucky to have you in their corner.
Yeah.
So thank you very much
for
your time
you.
Today.
Thank you.
Take care.